Welcome to Temple of Health Radio Show. This is Dr. Susan Kolb, and today I'm pleased to have as my guest Dr. Amit Goswami. His latest book is the Everything Answer Book, How Quantum Science Explains Love, Death, and the Meaning of Life. Dr. Goswami has been on the show many times before. He's written many books, and we've done the interviews. And if you would like to look up any of these interviews, they're at www.plasticos.com under Resources and Radio. Welcome, Dr. Goswami. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much, Susan, for inviting me.
So, this book seems to be a compilation of a lot of the other books that you've written, kind of bringing everything together. Is that what you intended?
Well, frankly, the book grew out of a dialogue that I had with a Japanese businessman philosopher who kind of noticed that none of my books have been translated in Japan, and he felt that my message should be heard in Japan. And so he wanted to publish these dialogues as a book, which was published in Japan and is doing very well. So after that, when I talked to my publisher, he wanted to publish it too, but he did not want that format. So I had to rewrite the format again in a regular book format. But other than that, because it grew out of those dialogues, it's the simplest book that I ever could write. So I'm very proud of it in the sense that, you know, finally, of course, I have been simplifying over the years a lot, you know. But still, even Quantum Creativity, which is the simplest book by far so far, does not compare in simplicity as to what this book has accomplished. So I think the reader would really, really like it.
So would you give the listening audience a little bit about your background, if they're not familiar with your work, and then we'll start in on the book.
I'll be happy to. I came to the subject of meaning of quantum physics because I wanted to put together my life's meaning. My life at one point, this is like going back like 40 years, 1973, and at that time I was extremely unhappy because my occupation, how I worked and how I lived, they just did not have anything in common, like most people's job. You do a job and then you are home, but your life has nothing to do with your occupation. And this didn't seem right, did not serve the meaning or purpose of my life. Although I was a scientific materialist at that time, but somehow this aspect of scientific materialism has never appealed to me anyway. So I had a message. I went to a conference and had a day of enormous jealousy towards others, professionals, who I thought was better than me in terms of lecturing, getting attention, putting their point across. And at 1 o'clock in the morning, I got disgusted with my jealousy, so I go outside and the place was near the Bay of Monterey. And the ocean air comes and hit my face, and I had this thought, why do I live this way? And I knew that I don't have to. So I started looking for meaning. If the listener will remember, right at that time, there was great changes in America. You know, in a couple of years, Chop Chopra's book, Tao of Physics, came out. And, of course, that attracted a lot of attention from me. And I found quantum physics something to work at. Nobody could understand quantum physics was the old verdict, but I was sure that I could, and I stuck to it. It took me a while, 10 years, but I did it. And there you are, the meaning and purpose of life, all because I persevered in discovering the meaning of quantum physics.
So quantum physics is, if you'll briefly describe how quantum physics works. I think when you were involved with What the Bleep Do We Know, that you had some great visuals that help the layperson understand quantum physics in terms of going from potentiality to actuality.
Yes. I think I touched a chord when I remember my opening line that became very popular. Quantum physics is the physics of possibility. So
right.
Indeed, you know, the basic quandrum that quantum physics created was that the idea that energy consists of discrete quantities or elementary particles, that by itself is surprising enough. But what is even more surprising when you realize that light is a form of energy, and this statement is literally saying that light consists of elementary particles. We call these elementary particles photons. It's, of course, well established now. But light has been known for centuries to be also waves.
Mm-hmm.
And there you have a huge contradiction. Waves can spread out. They can be in more than one place at a time. But particles are localized always, only one place at a time. So how can the same object be both wave and particle? They can't, of course. So one way that the equations could be interpreted was that the waves are waves of possibility. They are not waves of space and time. Instead, they define a domain of reality that we now call domain of potentiality. But at that time, that was very controversial, because for many years, the belief was that there is only one domain of reality, space and time. There is nothing else, because that's where matter moves. And the idea of some most scientists' belief is that for the sake of parsimony, we don't need to posit another domain like religions and mystics and spiritual traditions too. Even psychologists were already doing that thanks to Freud. But, you know, scientists, hard scientists, would not agree with that. So they kept away from this particular interpretation, which was taken forward by John von Neumann, who, with some mathematics, actually proved that not only these quantum objects are waves and residing in a domain of reality outside of space and time, he suggested that, look, there got to be a causal force from that domain which must convert the waves of possibility into particles of actuality, because material interactions certainly cannot do that. Von Neumann proved it mathematically. And Einstein, Podolsky, and Rosen, three great physicists in the meantime, proved that this domain of potentiality can even be distinguished from the domain of space and time. In space and time, everything moves with a finite speed, less than the speed of light or equal to the speed of light. In other words, there is a speed limit in the in space and time. Mm-hmm. But Einstein, Podolsky, and Rosen, they were able to show that there is infinite speed is possible in this domain of potentiality. So objects can communicate through that domain instantly without any signal being exchanged. So this domain was called non-local domain. Non-locality is prevalent. Signalless communication is called non-locality. And non-locality was distinguishes this domain of reality from the space-time domain of reality. Space-time domain of reality uses local signals going through space and time. But in the non-local domain, no signals are needed. Communication is instantaneous, which, if you think about it, means that there is only one thing. It's all one. So mystical oneness is back in physics, according to this interpretation of von Neumann.
So like telethought communication, which I think is our natural form of communication, would reside in the non-local realm rather than in the realm of having to take time to... Like if you were across the world from somebody and doing telethought communication, it would be instantaneous.
Exactly. But when I came in, there was still problem because people raised paradoxes against the von Neumann kind of thinking. Mm-hmm. The paradox was that von Neumann says that consciousness, this non-local domain, is consciousness. But the ideas were not very clearly stated yet. He thought mm-hmm. the consciousness is individual consciousness. He didn't identify consciousness with the non-local domain quite yet. So if individual consciousness changes possibility into actuality, then there would be paradox. The paradox would be that if there are two observers who have different ideas about what to choose, which aspect of possibility to actualize, then whose choice would be the one that would count? There was no answer to that. And this paradox then thwarted von Neumann's version of interpretation of quantum physics. So that's why it took me 10 years. And nobody else, of course, reached that conclusion anyway, but I was very fortunate. I was looking at many alternative avenues to understand things. And while I was talking to a mystic, whose beliefs are, of course, very much in tune with two domains of reality, oneness and all that, mm-hmm. Something broke through in my head, and I realized that if the non-local domain itself is consciousness, and that chooses, not the individual human consciousness, then we have a solution to the quantum measurement problem. And rest is history. After that, I have written book after book showing that this solution of quantum physics not only explains quantum measurement problem, but also gives us a theory of how consciousness is represented in the brain as a self, mm-hmm. and how we can construct a science of all of our experiences, not just the material experiences. The reason quantum physics is important for human beings is not because macro matter is quantum. Macro matter is approximately Newtonian, not quantum, not so quantum. But the stuff that we experience inside of us, mind, vital energies, which we feel, or intuition, that stuff is quantum. That stuff changes fast. And that is the stuff we access through our consciousness. That is the stuff we can change with our creativity. And that is the stuff with which we can affect the world and make our own reality.
Yeah, you started in your early books with the physics, which is a little bit complicated, you know, to understand. There's no question about that. But then using the same principles, you've kind of developed a... using the ideas of downward causation and some of the other physics terms, you've created kind of a map of how consciousness creates the material worlds. And then went on to that, went into, you know, quantum medicine, quantum business, quantum government, quantum education, and kind of using these principles, did a blueprint of what we need to shift in order to get out of the mess we're in.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
And that blueprint has only been more perfected, and the latest one is what I present in Everything Answer book.
Right. So this book, I mean, we've done interviews on most of your books, so I read your previous books, but this book is different because it actually... it starts at the beginning, but then goes all the way to the, you know, talking about enlightenment, the meaning of dreams, the meaning of purpose in life, quantum reincarnation, the creative principle, spiritual professions. You know, it goes way into formation of things that that we need to really create so that we will not enter into World War III and blow the planet up, which
right.
is
and not only
on the
that,
news
it
right
also,
now. You know?
Very good point. And not only that, it also points out something that I have said very few times, although I have hinted at it, mm-hmm. which is that now we have the understanding with which we can actually verify the part which is very difficult to even conceive that it can ever be verified, the idea mm-hmm. that individual self is cosmic consciousness, that right. idea, very mystical idea, you know, how do you prove it? I mean, I have shown theoretically that, yes, if the brain has a tangled hierarchy, then certainly brain will make a map of that cosmic consciousness, and this is what we experience as quantum self in creative experiences mm-hmm. or experiences of spiritual enlightenment. All good. But, you know, the big question is that how does one verify this idea that the quantum self or the experience of spiritual enlightenment or creative experience is showing us the identity with cosmic consciousness, because the identity requires a deeper experience. But if you try to think of a deeper experience, you find that no, the deeper state is one of identity. Identity means that there is no separateness. So we have no experience when there is identity, when the individual self is identical with the cosmic consciousness. So how do you find out something for which there is no experience? And still, mystics report that, yes, I know that we are identical because I have been there, although it is true that it's paradoxical. I shouldn't be able to experience that because experience indicates separateness. But this is the part that mystics used to say, ineffable. I cannot tell you how, but I did it. And quantum physics now can understand how that is possible. There is an idea called delayed choice. We choose now, but it actualizes, collapses a possibility that was instrumental for what I choose to experience now. Mm-hmm. And this idea has been verified with experimental data, so there is no doubt that delayed choice is possible. And the mystics claim the ineffable because of they use delayed choice to experience the ineffable. So it's not really an experience. One mystic, American mystic of recent times, called this an imperience. And I also call it an imperience in the Everything Answer book. But the whichever way you call it, it's just absolutely flabbergasting that you can explain something that the mystics have been thinking for ages, that nobody mm-hmm. can ever, you know, this is the ultimate paradox. How can you experience your identity with the cosmic consciousness? But you can through delayed choice. This is what I've shown in the Everything Answer book. So this is very good. This is just the final step of the whole mm-hmm. thing. So now you can really trust what is developing in the quantum worldview. I think we really have everything answered. We really have something, some basic worldview, which can give us answers to every human problem.
Right. I agree with you there. I think that we waste way too much money on research that is not going in the right direction.
Exactly.
And the political situations where research is suppressed or whole areas of medicine are suppressed because they're politically incorrect is responsible for a lot of the chronic disease that we have.
Yes.
So we have to fix the political situation and also the economic situation, because the economic drivers of the pharmaceutical industry, where they're trying to wipe out, you know, the supplement industry, is just a battle right now, and it can't be a battle because it just isn't, you know, you don't get anywhere. All you do is tear down what was built, and so far we haven't progressed that much.
No.
We really haven't.
But notice, Susan, that the present course has given us Donald Trump. So Donald Trump is the key to the remedy because, you know, this will bring up the crisis to such a height that, I mean, people just will notice that this cannot go on. We got to change our worldview. We got to integrate. This polarization between the religious, aristocratic, old worldview of Republicans and the new scientific materialism of Democrats, this just cannot be allowed to go on because they are both incomplete worldviews. Naturally, they are, we have a polarization. They cannot meet because they cannot have a common ground. They don't have a common ground. It's just we have to face the fact that they cannot meet because they do not have a common ground. And common ground is there in the quantum worldview. If both sides give a little and accept the fact that it is different from their old beliefs are, then it all can be solved and we'll be better for it. And that will happen because Trump will make it so bad that crisis will deepen. And then, you know, that we before we have economic crisis, 2008, Obama sort of kept a leash on it but did not really solve it. Could not solve
it. It's going to recur. It's going to recur. Yeah.
Exactly.
All the economists are saying it's going to recur. And probably this year.
And now the political crisis. So if political and economics both are in crisis, education, of course, already is in crisis, has produced a tremendous educational divide between the religious-minded and the materialist-minded. You know, higher education is democratic playground and lower education, high school education, that's the Republicans' playground. And this kind of polarization is awful for the society. You know, literally, a person who is religious cannot take higher education because higher education is monopolized by scientific materialism. And obviously, a spiritual religious person is nothing for him or her to learn in such a schema. So things just got to give. Things just got to change.
Yeah, and I think it's more than just the U.S. Have you listened at all to what the Webbot prophecies are? The Webbots, you know, have been around since about 2000. It's a prophecy based on an analysis of web information. It's called linguistic analysis, and it predicted all sorts of stuff, including 9/11. It's just a huge number of different things. And is predicting a world crisis, financial and governmental. But it's worldwide. It's not just the U.S. It's actually worldwide, which I think has to happen because things just can't be in the U.S. For the world to change, it has to be worldwide. And he said something about potentially the bond markets going, because a lot of the governments are based on bond income. But that's very, that is like, around August, according to the linguistic analysis. But if you look at the history of the web bots, it has a very, very high accuracy, probably because the other type of predictions are based from information from a higher level, you know, a higher consciousness level where time and space are not. So timing is often, unless you bring astrology into it, timing is often off.
Right.
But the web bots tend to be very, very specific in time because it's a totally different analysis. So I think your prediction of this crisis is actually worldwide, not just the U.S.
Yes, yes.
And it's financial and governmental. It's both. So that look to August for that.
Yes, and it is similar, too, because, for example, you know, we could always, with some pride, point out that at least American politicians don't take bribe. But the newest scandal of the Trump administration already is showing that they are literally taking bribes. So,
well, bribes have been taken by everybody forever. I mean, bribes are... And let me tell you something about bribes. This is interesting. Do you know that pretty soon the Cayman Island accounts will no longer be secret?
Yeah.
So a lot of a lot of the bribes that were taken can now be revealed. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
And this is all happening in the end times where everything's blowing up. So it's almost like nothing can be remain a secret.
Right.
All the secrets are being revealed.
Right.
I just think it's a very interesting time.
Yes.
I mean, who knew that the Cayman Island accounts would then be revealed? I mean, nobody knew that.
Yes, that is fascinating.
I mean,
yes.
It is fascinating. I mean, first it was the Swiss, and now the Cayman. And so basically, it's very, very interesting that all of this crisis is occurring at once, probably at the end of this year. And the predictions are is that the timelines are splitting in January. So in January, one timeline will go one place, and another timeline will go another place. And so the world that we end up in, because of this quantum, this idea of downward causation and choosing a reality, you know, we literally align ourselves energetically with one reality or the other. And I believe the one reality is possibly could be going toward World War III. It's not a world I want to live in. And another I know you don't either. And another reality is going toward all the things that you talk in your book, you know, all the spiritual development, bringing these principles into business, government, law, medicine, you know, just all of our institutions.
Yes. And we can count on it, because after all, again, the big conclusion from the quantum worldview is that consciousness is the ground of being. Therefore, it is all a movement of consciousness, including the crisis. Mm-hmm. And therefore, we couldn't possibly end up in absolute nothingness that World War III will bring. So I think we are quite safe there.
I think we are, too. I do want to mention something about enlightenment. You know, I've interviewed a lot of masters on my... I've done Temple of Health for 20 years now, and I've interviewed a fair number of masters and people who've achieved enlightenment. It is important to understand, and I think you probably have realized this, too, that enlightenment is something that occurs often suddenly. And then, like, you might be walking around kind of in a daze for about a week, but then gradually you come back down to the vibrational level that you were at before. You know, it's not something that is sustainable. And one of the people I was interviewing, it was interesting, they said a fair number of people who become enlightened then go on to transition.
Yes.
Were you aware of that? I thought that was fascinating.
Yes, that's precisely what I mean when I say that they can directly verify that the individual self is rooted in the cosmic consciousness. The ones who go to that transition, they are the ones who can be said to be truly enlightened. Others return to more or less the normal state of living, and then they go back to their normal pursuits, like becoming a teacher and becoming famous and writing a book and all that.
Right.
The truly enlightened doesn't care about that anymore, because their ego is gone, and without the ego, you cannot succeed in the world. So they're more or less like the Zen Oxford pictures. They more or less live in the village as a nobody.
Right. Well, it's just interesting that people pursue enlightenment without, I don't think they really realize what it is. The experience is one, the cosmic consciousness experience is where you're one with everything and you understand everything.
Yes.
But it's like once you've had it, and I had it in high school, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Once you've had it, you realize very, very much that you are part of all that is. I mean, but all that is outside this dimension, too. And that you can know everything. Like when you're in spirit, you know everything. I mean, it's not, you know, we're not dumbed down into these physical bodies and our physical brains. But that, you know, that just because you've experienced that doesn't mean that you stay in that state permanently.
And
it just
that
doesn't.
Is the problem, precisely.
Yeah.
Because you cannot stay in the quantum self permanently. That's the problem.
No, you have to come back down here and be in the physical body if you're going to stay.
So your only other choice is to surrender the ego permanently, and that's the transition that you talked about. And when that transition happens, then people live in a sort of a sleep-like state, which the Indians have a name called Nirvikalpa Samadhi, very complicated Sanskrit name. But all it means is that state of equanimity without any separation. How can we be in such a state and still report about it? That's where the delayed choice idea of quantum physics comes handy.
Yeah. Well, I think India probably has more realized masters than any other country, wouldn't you say?
Yes, I think that is generally true, although today we don't see such masters declaring themselves in the public, or people discovering such masters mm-hmm. among the villagers. You know, Ramakrishna was one such, but mm-hmm. that happened quite some time ago. Ramana Maharshi was another one, and both of mm-hmm. them were sort of forcefully brought into the public view. They didn't want to particularly, and they never did become part of this name, fame, scene in the way that modern enlightened teachers tend to be. Those two were a different breed altogether.
Mm-hmm. I've been reading a lot of Mayor Baba's work. He was very prolific, and I visited his retreat. Of course, he passed away after, I think, his second car accident in the 70s, but he was very prolific and quite an interesting master.
Yes, he was. He was.
Yeah.
And so was Nisargadatta Maharaj. But, you know, I mean, that's the usual trend. They come back to mm-hmm. the plane, and then they sort of behave as a little bit mixed up, because mm-hmm. at once they obviously have a mind towards publicizing their interesting situation. Mm-hmm. But, of course, they did touch the infinite, no question about it either.
Right.
So they're very wise people. At the same time, mm-hmm. it's a little bit confusing because, you know, it doesn't obviously convey the idea that they are entitled to live in an undivided reality
right.
some of the time if they went that other route, but they mm-hmm. just didn't, that's all.
Yeah. Now, you bring up in Chapter 6 the world of archetypes. Archetypes really don't exist in the third dimension, although, you know, the idea of the archetype is something that, you know, everybody kind of intuitively knows. Where would you say, what is the purpose of archetypes, and what level of the, you know, of the consciousness realm would you say they reside in?
Well, you know, I mean, consciousness is a domain of material, from which uh-huh. material experiences come, domain of material potentiality. Then we have the domain of vital energy potentiality. Then we have the domain of potentiality of meaning. That's where our mental thoughts come from. And mm-hmm. then we have the domain of archetype. So it's mm-hmm. the fourth domain of experience, and spirit domain is beyond that. Spirit domain is mm-hmm. the holistic domain, which mm-hmm. puts everything together. So you are right, but there is that in-between domain, and it is the closest to the spirit domain because mm-hmm. it has not. We do not have at this stage the ability to represent the archetypes directly in physical matter. We have mm-hmm. to do it through our mind or through our vital body, through our feelings. And because of this, we make only second-hand representation of the archetypes. So mm-hmm. this is at once a little bit limiting, but it also makes the archetypal experience very powerful. Our mm-hmm. archetypes are very transformational. So in fact, you know, I am suggesting in the Everything Answered book that one can be called an enlightened person if one stays with the archetypes and go on exploring archetype after archetype and makes, you know, a physical representation of the archetypes in the form of brain circuits, because then this person's behavior would be so spontaneously godly or almost spontaneously godly that we could call them a different form of enlightened people. In fact, mm-hmm. I submit that they would be in some ways more enlightened than the enlightened people we know who came down from that quantum self-experience, did not go through the transition to that higher state of nobody special, because mm-hmm. these people are more genuine in the sense of what their state is what their state is, because mm-hmm. they live in a state of flow, a creative state in which the ego literally interacts, dances with the quantum self, and that too is one way of perpetuating the quantum self experience, the non-local experience. So they are closer to the enlightened state of living. You know, I myself try to do that. And so far, the success is quite remarkable. You know, I find myself 80% happy and in flow. And I would say that this is pretty good. If I chose the other route, and I'm glad you didn't either, then, you know, you would go for name and fame and become a spiritual teacher and get caught in what knows, God knows what.
Well, I think, you know, you have a section on reincarnation here. I think some of my previous lives I've been better known, and that is a problem sometimes.
Yes.
Well, look at the celebrities today. Their privacy, they're always having to sue the tabloids for all sorts of stories that aren't true. It just is not that safe or easy to be well known in the society that we have now.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know about the future society. The future society, when people are better behaved, it may be fine to be better known. But, you know, right now, it's not something that is that safe.
That you look
believe.
Forward to, yes.
Yeah.
Yes, I agree with you. And therefore,
so,
I'm very happy that I have maintained a very low-key life.
Right. Well, you and I both, we get to the people that we need to get to, the patients that I need to get to. You get to the, you know, the spiritual seekers you need to get to. So we do influence a lot of people. It's just that we're not on the tabloids, which is good.
No, not spectacular, no.
Right. Now, you have a chapter 12, quantum reincarnation. Would you like to talk about that a little bit? I found that
very much so, because, you know, part of the problem of the country today is that half of our countries, or slightly more than half, are pretty much of old souls. And why not? Because America is a spiritually rather developed country, really. On the whole, you know, the American culture, judging from how much progress we made in the 60s and 70s, you know, how quickly we became so spiritual and so wonderfully creative. Of course, since then, we have been falling down. But even now, you know, there is a larger portion, and I think they are old souls that have been reincarnated many times. On the other hand, there is also a almost half of the country, you know, mainly the Trump voters, they are relatively new souls, and part of their problem is not a problem of really belligerent racism or belligerent sexism. It's just that they're new souls, they're inexperienced, they're ignorant. Their ignorance shows. And this ignorance politicians take advantage of, and unfortunately, through the collective unconscious, you know, they can be influenced. And they have been influenced, they have been duped, you might say. And the reason they can be duped is that they haven't gotten to their voices yet. They're still very much persuaded by others. And that's what happens when we are new souls, when we are not so grown up, not so mature.
Right.
So reincarnation is something, is a phenomenon that needs to take into account by our media, by our psychologists. They should know about it. They should incorporate it into the way that the American psyche is today. Otherwise, one would never be able to understand how a country can be so polarized, so divided.
Right. Yeah, that's very true. And I've met some people that actually were here on Earth for the first time, which was interesting. You know, they'd been on other planets, but they hadn't been on Earth before. And they were really, you know, like, it was really hard. Life was really hard for them, as you can imagine, if they're first timers, you know.
Yes.
So we do have to take that into account. Just like
very
we wouldn't
so.
Expect somebody in the second grade to behave somebody like in the second year of college. You know,
we cannot. And it really, today's, as you point out already, that today's life just requires so much sophistication, because you know, you have to come to reality with the that the fact that you cannot keep it a secret. But of course, when we are ignorant, we are kind of helpless before our instinctual habits and instinctual foibles, and so we cannot help it. And still, we want to be famous. Still, we want to be the head honcho. And those two conflicting things get us in trouble. If we live like nobody, then who cares about your scandal? But if you want to be somebody and still have a scandalous life, you get in trouble today. And it should be this way. Why shouldn't it not be this way? So, you know, those are the problems. And it is now, you know, it's coming to a head because... it has to change. We have to have our respect for each other back. We have to have some respect for oneness back, and not always just in transaction, taking care of numero uno, you know, what is in it for me. Every transaction has to be what is in it for me. Based on that only, it just got to give to a more transformational attitude of what is in it for me and the world.
Now, you talk about dreams as a way that your higher guidance can inform you about things you may not know about, prepare you for things coming up. There's a number of different very important things that your dreams can reveal. Would you like to comment on that?
Very much so, because you know one of the things that reincarnation theory suggests, and as I said, the reincarnation is a theory that whose time has come. It's experimentally, I mean, empirically very much verified, so much data in favor of it that we should now really come back to acceptance. And people who live in the Christian world, they should remember that Christianity abandoned the idea of reincarnation only in the 5th century. Jesus certainly believed in reincarnation. The Gnostic discipline still believes in reincarnation. They never gave up on it. Only political faction in Constantinople decided in 5th century that they want to move away from the idea because they wanted to abolish the Gnostic influence, the influence of the transformation-oriented people. So that's a political story, not a decision made out of any kind of observation or experience of people or insight of people, just a political decision. So if we accept reincarnation, then one of the big thing reincarnational theory tells us, and the data supports it, is that we bring only certain qualities to bear in this life. And why is that? Because we choose to explore our own selected archetype in this life. We don't want to get divided into too many archetypes. So instead of bringing all the accumulated propensities that we collect over our accumulated reincarnations, we bring only a selected number of those propensities, that will be helpful for the exploration of a specific archetype. Like if you want to explore love, you don't need the expertise that you need to explore mathematics, which is an exploration of truth. So in that way, every archetype demands its own expertise, and that's precisely what we bring. And dreams are a great guide to your chosen archetype. You know, in my workshops, I use dreams. I use past life regression a little bit, or regression to childhood memories. And those are the ways to remember what archetype have I chosen in this life. And as Joseph Campbell used to say, if you know your archetype and follow it, you will follow bliss.
Right. That's very true. Everybody has a path. You know, everybody, first of all, people really don't realize how much spiritual help we have. And dreams are one of the easiest ways to access that spiritual help, because you have them every night, and all you have to do is, when you wake up, have some method of capturing them before they dissolve into, you know, the day. And I think that is something that everybody can start to do.
Absolutely.
I had an interesting dream last night. I had a dream that I was like way up on the top of a mountain that was like incredibly high up. It was a little bit scary. I was trying to drive a car and stay on the road, but you know, the road, you could look way down on either side. And then I came to a gate that was wooden, a wooden gate, And then I went, the gate opened, and I went into another realm that was not this world. And I believe that that was my higher self showing me ascension.
Mm-hmm.
I believe mm-hmm. that that was the, you know, that there is a gate, there is a place
mm-hmm.
where you leave this world and you go into another world. I mean,
mm-hmm.
it's still going to be a world. It's still going to be a physical world. But it's going to be, there's going to be a separation there. There's
mm-hmm.
going to be a, you know, a change.
Mm-hmm.
That's probably when the timeline split. So anyway, this is an interesting
interesting
dream. Yeah.
Certainly is. Yeah, this is the kind of realm that, you know, we can call archetypal realm.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
Yes, this is the kind of realm which the dreams can give us a hint, and then that also gives us a hint about the kind of archetype that we have chosen to follow in this life.
So, would you like to give your contact information?
Yes, of course. It's amitgoswami.org. That's my website, A-M-I-T, as in Tom, G-O-S-W-A-M-I.org. Amit Goswami, my full name, without any space between them, .org. That's the website, and every information that is relevant about me, my events, like this interview, when Susan sent it to us, we'll put it on the website.
Right.
So this is a great place to find out things about me and contact me. There is also contact information, an email
right.
address.
Well, I wanted to finish up with a little bit on quantum medicine, because obviously that's my field of expertise. And I was interviewing somebody just, I think, 2 weeks ago, and something stood out that I wanted to share with you. It said that health is influenced by attitude, environment, and karma. And I think it's important to differentiate those three. Karma, which we were talking about before, and you made the great point that we don't bring all of our karma into each lifetime, because if we did, it might be a little bit overwhelming, especially
yeah.
if it was negative karma. But we work on certain things and certain lessons and bring the appropriate karma in. In general, I found that karmic things are often like RSD, reflex sympathetic dystrophy, a lot of the neurological stuff, and there's not much that can be done. I mean, when I use applied kinesiology, so I muscle test, and I see that there's not too much that we can do. We can relieve suffering with pain medicine and, you know, sometimes other means of, you know, bringing in more energy, but essentially, the patient's going to go through a period, usually a pain condition, that is not going to be able to be relieved very well. And then there's attitude. And there's so much with your whole theory where you see that when emotions are not, especially negative emotions or mental attitudes that are not appropriate and very healthful, they block energy and they cause problems within the physical body. And those need to be cleared by, you know, changing attitude and changing and, you know, working to release negative emotions and blockages within the body. But then the last one, that's what I usually do. I do a lot of the environment, you know, toxic breast implants, heavy metals, mold in the environment, creating biotoxins. Our environment is actually quite toxic to some
yeah.
people, especially if they don't have detoxification, if they have detoxification defects, or if they're not able to get rid of certain things. Like the patient I'm operating on next week, for the last 10 years has had a mold infection in one side of her sinuses that's really been, no doctor has been able to even diagnose or treat it. It's like regular medicine just doesn't realize that a huge percent of the population are affected by things that are treatable, but you
mm-hmm.
have to kill the mold, you know,
mm-hmm.
that's part of the thing, and then bring energy in. Other energy technologies are good to bring in to, you know, to help the sinus and the immune system regain its health.
Yes.
But anyway, say a little bit about quantum medicine, because that's one of the things that I really appreciated that you did.
Yes. Actually, you know, quantum worldview, the most important, one of the most important accomplishments of the quantum worldview, aside from legitimizing the archetypes, is mm-hmm. to legitimize feelings or right. these vital energies. Now, truly, the, materialists thought that they have eliminated vitalism from their theories, but right. that was premature. Obviously, vitalism as a dualistic concept cannot be justified, but mm-hmm. It does not have to be a dualistic concept at all, because it's grounded all, like material is also grounded in the primacy of consciousness. And mm-hmm. so vital energy and material body, the organs, they communicate via our consciousness, non-locally. So this question of mediation, all those problems have been solved by the quantum worldview. Vital energy is as legitimate as our intuitive experiences of the archetype and our experiences of our mental thought, meaning. So that said, mm-hmm. The energies then, we have to wake up to them. And mm-hmm. we really haven't. We don't realize that the toxicity is not only toxicity of the physical, but literally we do not get adequate energy nutrition from mm-hmm. our food anymore. Or if we do get, we sometimes get the wrong vital energy. Mm-hmm. For example, take the case of beef. You know, I do not think that beef eating is particularly very a good thing, because the vegetable eating is actually better from a vital energy point of view, because its mm-hmm. vegetables are less differentiated. That's a little right. bit complicated concept without going into details. But this less differentiated, the listener will get the importance of it, because you hear constantly how important the stem cells are. And stem, mm-hmm. cell not, stem cells are not differentiated at all. That's a distinction. Right. So plant is better to eat, because the cells are less differentiated, which means that the vital energies will suit us better for nutrition. Mm-hmm. And then beef is okay. If it is good beef from a cattle which was raised on natural food, but right. the cattle which is raised the way that American manufacturers raise cattle, disaster. That's, right. I call it angry beef. You are right. eating the wrong kind of vital energies, mm-hmm. Although the beef certainly tastes better, perhaps, you know, not as stringy as the mm-hmm. Nature-grown cattle would. Mm-hmm. But look, if you want to ruin your health and your mind and your emotional body with angry beef, that's up to you, mm-hmm. all for your taste. But, you know, I have eaten both when I was a meat eater, and the naturally grown beef does not taste all that bad, really. Mm-hmm. It's pretty good. So yeah. you should re-examine the mm-hmm. ways. Of course, you know, economic problem is another thing, mm-hmm. but I think economy can adjust very quickly. I don't think there is any justification of the way beef is made in our country. There's just no justification of it.
Yeah, I think we have to be very careful of organophosphate chemicals in beef causing diseases like Alzheimer's. It's very, very dangerous for people
very,
with
very
certain
dangerous.
Detoxification
and the Asian relationship now is clear.
Non-organic beef, yeah.
Yeah.
I wanted to mention one thing, and maybe you can research this. You might be a little surprised. Trump signed an executive order that said within a couple of years, technologies involving not just free energy, but also medical technologies involving things like scalar energy need to be released. So you should research that. If indeed these are released, I think that medicine will be totally transformed. I recently have been researching something called a holographic medical bed, which will completely revolutionize surgery and most medicine. So take a look at this. Trump may be actually able to break through some things that uh-huh. nobody else has been able to break through. And if indeed these actually are released, I think our worlds will change much for the better. But take a look at that executive order.
Actually, you know, I am looking for such surprises from Trump, because government, one thing should be understood.
He's not as controlled as some of the other people have been. Yeah. So this is good.
But the point is that, you know, the Democrats are also going in the wrong direction. They are following scientific materialism, and doing that, they are imposing restrictions, regulations in the wrong place, and making it very difficult for alternative medicine, alternative business, alternative energies. And, you know, if Trump releases some of these regulations and lessens the government control over these things, I think that will be a good thing. And so,
well, I think I'm hopeful that this will happen. We're coming up on the end of our hour. I want to thank you very much for joining us, Dr. Goswami. It's been a great interview, and I've really enjoyed reading your book.
Thank you, Susan. I really appreciate being here.
Well, this is Dr. Susan Kolb with Temple of Health Radio Show. We've been interviewing Dr. Amit Goswami, The Everything Answer Book, How Quantum Science Explains Love, Death, and the Meaning of Life. Next week, we will be interviewing Dr. Joseph Gallenberger on Soul's Journey After Death. Thank you very much.